Hello and welcome to Living That Belle Vie. I am your host, Monday Young, transition coach, helping you to live the life you want no matter where you are. And I'm excited to start today's episode and meet our new guest, and I hope you are too. So let's get started. So hello everyone, and thank you for joining us here today on Living That Belle Vie. And I am so excited to have one of my mastermind sisters here with me, and we're going to be talking about wheeling through change. And I'm going to be speaking with Tiffany Vinson, who we're going to be talking about the journey of purpose and reimagining your life. So Tiffany has an amazing story, a beautiful transformation story, and I'm delighted to be interviewing her today. So hey Tiffany, thank you for joining me.
Hi Monday, thank you for having me. It's such an honor. I appreciate you.
Yeah, and just to give people a bit of background, that we met in a mastermind called Epic Woman.
Yeah.
Run by Abrielle Franks, which is a mastermind for women entrepreneurs trying to move to the next level. So me and Tiffany met there, and I met her, never forgot her journey and story. And yeah, so that's how we met.
It's amazing. It was really amazing.
It was really amazing. And it just shows how important sort of having support and camaraderie and how our stories can help each other. So Tiffany, yes. I just want you to introduce yourself briefly and just tell us a bit about you before we dive into your full story.
Well, again, I want to thank you, Monday, for having me here. It's such an amazing to have you as a business bestie. We always rely and learn yes. from each other. So again, thank you for having me. I am Tiffany Vinson. I live here in Riverdale, Georgia, 15 minutes from downtown Atlanta. Okay. I'm a wife. I am a mother, daughter, bestie, and a friend, MS ambassador for the Multiple Sclerosis Center Society. So there's a lot of different things that that, you know, pulls me all together. But that's essentially a little bit of who I am.
Yeah, great. So, Tiffany, I want you to talk a bit about how, you know, as this, you know, over the next couple of months, I'm really focusing on people going through major life transitions, how to navigate those, like whether it's career, relationship, just life happens and pushes you into transformation. And you have a beautiful story about transformation. And I just want you to tell us a bit about how your life transformation, when life kind of threw you a curveball and you're processing that curveball to come into where you are now.
Oh, wow. So it all began when I wanted to become a flight attendant. I left my first year in college, not even the first year, probably by spring break, I was ready to come home. And I wanted to pursue being a flight attendant. And now, mind you, I had never been on a plane in my life at this point.
You've never been on a plane in your life.
Never in a plane in my life, but I wanted to be a flight attendant because all I could think about was that outfit, the cute outfit, the suit.
They pumps. Do sell the outfits, yeah.
Yeah. And just scrolling through the airport, you know, I never thought anything more. It wasn't until I got in and realized that there was so much more than just passing out biscuits and sodas or, you know, rum and coke. It was so much more to that. It was literally having to learn the aircrafts themselves and the compartments and all the technical things that they don't necessarily tell people that we have to know. Yeah. But I later realized that my walking was a little off. My fatigue was really high. And I thought maybe it's because I'm flying. But I had had my son on August 11, 2001 and September 11, 2001. We understand what happened globally. And so for me, I was holding my son, nursing him on maternity leave when the planes hit. And so at that point, it was like, okay, you need to shift because I'm not going back to becoming a flight attendant as now that I'm a mother.
And then 9/11 changed your desire to become a flight attendant.
Oh, I had already became one at that point.
You already became one.
And
then you decided to stop being a flight attendant after 9/11.
Yeah, I literally was on maternity. I had my son on August 11, 2001. Okay. I was literally on maternity leave 9/11. And watching the news, and I saw it. I was like, oh. And then the second plane was, unfortunately, my friend, well, it's my friend's lane. She was flying for United at that point, and that leg was hers. So I initially thought, oh my gosh, Monique isn't in that situation. I'm calling, blowing her phone up. And for her, she had actually stayed off. She had had someone to pick up her leg, her flight. And so.
Yeah. So she missed the 9/11.
She did miss that. And so it was like, she lives with that. So that was like, okay, transition for me. And so I went back.
Do you think it was because the birth of your son was like, I want to be here for him, and this may be too dangerous for me now as a mother?
Yes.
Right. And could you ever imagine you making that decision?
Not at that time. I think during training itself, it seemed like all the planes were just having situations. At that point, we were just talking about if a flight, if there was a fire on the flight, if there was that, it was never to a point if someone were to take over the flight. My training book did not discuss that because it wasn't in our scope. It had never.
But becoming a mother too, did that trigger something about how you made your decisions?
Oh yes. Being a mother changed it. As soon as I held that baby, it changed, right?
Yeah.
I think it changed even before.
I think for a lot of women, like, you know, especially as modern women, especially if you haven't had a child yet, because everything changes once the baby is out. Yeah. So we have all these ideas about how we're going to be and what we're going to do and go back to work and do all of this stuff. And then the baby comes and you're like,
perspectives change.
Yes.
Perspectives change is like, no, I can't be gone 4 or 5 days out of the week with a baby and flying. Yeah. And in order to make the money, you had to fly as per flight hour. So it's, you may get money, but you had to, in order to make it, you had to put in. And so I went back into finance and finance and banking, and I went into that world. And so once I went into that world, that's when I was, MS started showing up more. At that time, it was not diagnosed.
Okay.
But I was just fatigued. I was tired. I was walking with a limp. Thought it was a knee injury. I thought, that was
it. Okay, so. Once you transition jobs, you're no longer doing these long haul flights and things like that. Mm-hmm. You started this new position and you started having some physical abnormities.
Exactly.
You were walking, your body was doing some strange things, but you didn't know what was happening.
I did not know what was happening. And the doctors were like, oh, she's super depressed. And I'm like, that's not going to be, you're not going to give me a pill for that. Like that's not even it.
So you're displaying all these physical abnormalities and they try to diagnose it as depression?
Yeah. The first doctor was like, it's just depression. It's depression. And lo and behold, this one particular doctor was like, I think I know what this is. And I was like, okay. And she's like, it's MS. And I'm like, okay. She just said MS. I don't know. That didn't, it didn't ring to me.
Sclerosis. Yeah.
And she said, Montel Williams has it. And I was like, he has MS. I'm like, but he's running and jumping on stage. You know how he interviews and he does all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it didn't.
Yeah. For those of you who are not old enough to know who that is.
I'm sure my age,
our age right now. Montel Williams used to be a daytime talk show host in the United States.
Yes.
Black male, which was rare.
Yes, that's rare.
For super daytime television. And he was like an ex-Navy man, very nice looking, very well built. And he had a daytime talk show host that was very popular.
It was very broad. But and that's what the doctor was saying. She's like, oh, Milton Williams. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but I don't understand. It didn't correlate. But it wasn't until I was at work and one of our elder customer walked in and we're helping her. And she said, you need to go see a neurologist. You need to get your brain looked at.
A neurologist.
Now, I know this is crossbreed, but where we're from, you respect your elders, and I think that's across the board. We should respect our elders, right? So, yes, ma'am, I'm going to see me a Naraja. And so what that was, when she said brain check, I said, yes, ma'am. And so I went back to my doctor, and the doctor said, yes, I think it's, you know, your balance is off. Mm-hmm. And I think it's MS. And so the neurologist, she says, well, before I send you off to confirm it, I need you to get insurance in place. Because during that time, there was pre-existing conditions. So had dictated anything in my notes about MS or anything of that nature, it would have been deemed as already being diagnosed or having before something confirmed. Right. Okay. So in that instance, the doctor was so important. It was so integral. At that time, I didn't understand what she was doing. Yeah. But yes, ma'am, I respect, again, she was an elder. Go get your life insurance, your disability insurance. Make sure you have all these things.
This is not like freaking you out. Like you go in because you think you're like losing your balance. Yes. And like, you might have MS. You need to go see a brain doctor.
Girl.
Get your affairs in order. You're like, what the heck is going on?
So let me tell you, I'm going to be honest. This is the truth. After I had my boys, I had started to grow in my breast area. So I thought my imbalance was this extra weight. So I actually was inquiring. Girls were throwing me off balance, right? Like, I'm like, oh my gosh. So my doctor's like, I don't think it's the breast, but I understand. Let's take up this issue and then we'll deal with that later.
Right.
And so I had to go in. She says, I want you to schedule a nurse visit when you come back. And I want you to bring in all your paperwork so I can review it. And once I see that you have everything in place, then I refer you over to a neurologist.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay. So it was a list of, I mean, she was giving me everything I needed. And I thank God for her because at that time.
Sounds like an amazing doctor.
She was amazing. Now she works for the VA. Yeah. And that's where she can definitely make an impact and change. I mean, she made an impact and change in my life, right?
Yeah. And that's the importance of, I just want to state about trusting your instincts with a doctor.
Yes.
If it doesn't feel right, and that doctor doesn't seem to actually be invested in you, your care as a person, go to another doctor.
Go.
Because I have been to a doctor because I have a bad knee, and I've had like 4 surgeries, and they were telling me I needed a full knee replacement. I was too young for this.
Right.
And all the doctors like, you're very young for that. And so many doctors were like, oh, you have to have a full knee replacement. And I was like, it's not possible for a partial. And everyone was telling me no. And what no meant for them was that they weren't capable.
Mm.
And then I found a doctor who was capable, and I had the partial, which gives me, you know, 7 to 10 years before I have to have a full knee replacement. Right. So it's like, if I wouldn't have trusted my instinct, then I would have went with that first doctor who I was like, this don't. So like your first doctor trying to tell you depressed, you're like, I don't think that's what this is.
No, it's not. It's not depression.
Yeah. So
it was
follow your instincts. If it doesn't feel right,
and go with it and go with it and seek in every instance, seek a second opinion and sometimes a third. So that what you can have in place. Don't worry about that copay. Don't worry. It's best to go ahead and take care of you because you're your number one. You got to take care of you first before anything and anyone else. And so it was important. So once I did get the appointment, the nurse visit, my nurse Juanita, I'll never forget. And then I go, the first neurologist, I went by myself. I didn't want anyone else to go with me. I didn't even tell my mother, my husband. I didn't tell anyone. I just went. And that doctor came out with groom and doom. You won't be able to walk. You won't. And I'm like, whoa, he was giving me all the negatives. And I remember that particular day, it was on a Thursday, and it was pouring down like the bottom fell out. And I remember going to the desk and scheduling your next appointment. And I said, no, ma'am. And I walked out. I knew then that I needed to get another opinion. This man had he didn't have the capability. Like we just said before.
Right. The empathy.
The empathetic part. Right. He wasn't empathetic. He wasn't offering any type of solutions or resolve. It was all the negative. And so I quickly moved away from that. scheduled my appointment with my doctors, the new neurologist, and my mother, my father, and my husband were there. And they were crying and upset. And I was sitting there stoic because I already knew.
Yeah. So I just wanted to pause to think about that a bit. So in the beginning, you went by yourself. You got the news by yourself. So what you needed to digest that first yourself before you told anyone.
Yes. I'm a processor. So I don't, you know, people can pop up and go and do, I'm not that. I have to sit aside and think on it, pray on it, meditate on it. And deal and sort. So my reaction is just not. And I think that that's a hidden treasure for me because that's helped me to.
Yeah. Because sometimes telling our family can excite people and they get all emotional while you're still actually trying to process your own emotions, you know, about how you feel about something or how that something is going to affect your life. And people start asking you questions that you maybe can't actually answer. So I think that's actually kind of wise to take the time to first get all the information, process it yourself, and then get your family involved to see how they can, so that then you can process it with them, but it's not all a shock for everybody.
You have to process it. And so that's the most important part. I think that a lot of times we get
the reality. That's like the reality punch. Like this doctor came, told you all this doom and gloom. I think that's something, you know, if there's any doctors ever listening to this that, okay, it's the facts and we all have to receive this the facts. But when you're dealing someone a diagnosis that is basically going to change their life completely.
Life change.
Yeah, that you might want to balance the news with like, these are the possibilities, not like you're going to be handicapped, can't walk.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's like you're not setting that person's mindset up to think about this in a way that is manageable, at least. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that's really important. I think that, and I know that in any physician, any job, any career, people get comfortable and they start using lingo and they start using, but that doesn't necessarily correlate to the customer or the patient or what have you. So you're right. You're right.
Yeah. I think people need time to process information. It's like, why don't you take these pamphlets home and read a little bit about MS? Come see me in a week and we can sit down and talk about everything. You know, something a little bit more like not like bullet through the heart. It's like, it's bad enough.
You're going to lose your license. You ain't gonna be able to drive. You ain't gonna be able to do anything. I'm like, that was a lot to process. And so I think that that was so important that the new neurologist, he still was kind of, you know, standoffish. However, I was able to get through and got maintained. And so tried different medications and things of that nature. But in that transition was definitely one that I didn't foresee.
Yes. Didn't foresee at all. Right.
No.
Because life is never, you know, life is never, it's like this, you know, it's never like this. There's always ups, downs, up and downs. And you don't know which ones are going to be yours.
Yes.
So you went from being a healthy young woman thinking you had some imbalance issues. You just had a child.
Yes.
And now you're diagnosed with MS.
Yes.
And so when did the like full, what was the process to accepting the change? Because we always get, and this is just my perspective. It's almost like processing a death in a way. It's like when a member of your mother, your father dies, like you hear it, you see it, but it takes months to actually be like, oh, I can't pick up the phone anymore. Like this person is no longer here for me. And the day that actually hits on a profound level can be a long time from the time.
Yes.
Even if you buried them and you saw them and you were there, it's like it takes time for you to understand.
And
like
there, yes. And there's no time limit, because with me, I've been diagnosed for 17 years. So for me, that transition, mm-hmm. there were several transitions from me wearing heels to now rocking sandals and tennis shoes, missing wearing heels, feet are wide and short, mm-hmm. you know, so it's always going to be a challenge. But it wasn't until there's several different changes. So then I went from walking those heels straight and doing my thing, right, in corporate mm-hmm. America, to now being handed this big silver cane at the doctor's office. The same nurse who helped me in the beginning handed me this medal. Yeah, she gave me this metal cane, and I literally lost it. I was in Pfizer. I
would have lost it too.
It mentally was like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
And I had to be escorted out. I was so traumatic. I was very traumatized. It was very traumatizing. And in that moment, I remember calling my job, and I was like, listen, I'm coming back. But, you know, I was upset. And my supervisor at the time was like, okay, just get here. You know, no big deal. I was the type of person, even if something was going on, I'm still going to go to work. I'm still going to do what I need to do.
You're so American.
Yeah, that's so American, isn't it?
Because I would have been like, I ain't going to be able to do it. I was like, I am not going to be able to do it. Not today.
I think that. In that moment, it was crazy because my coworkers at the time, we became family. Of course, you know, when you work with someone, it's five mm-hmm. of us, it was, you know, we're close. But in that moment driving, I was crying the entire time. And I remember getting to the parking in the front of the door of the business. And my coworker, who's now my brother, I call mm-hmm. him my brother, Ahmad, came out, and he's not the one that you would have wanted to come out at that moment. But I think that, and I know that God put it in play for it to be that way, because there's no other way. I would have written it out. I would have said, hey, have Tracy come out. Tracy would have coddled me. She would have done this. However, yeah. I had him, and he got to the door, and I'm like, you need to stop crying. It's a cane. We can bling this thing. You can make it work for you.
We're about to bedazzle.
He's like, he was like, we can bedazzle it. We can make it cute, make it you. But if it's going to help you, then we need you to get in here and let's do it. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I look back now and go, that was really what I needed in that moment.
Yeah. He helped you to change your mindset. He shifted or at least
really quickly.
Yeah.
And more so than that, they were so respectful and didn't want to call my husband. With, you know, that she's upset and all that, because he's at work. He's an educator. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, we got her. We got her from here until she gets home. She's okay. Don't call her and disturb her husband with this. We got her. And so in that, I learned how to.
And you know, you can share as much of this as you want. Yes. How was that for your relationship? Were you scared about how this might change relationship to your husband, to intimacy, to how you connect, if it would be a danger to your marriage? What was going through your mind as far as, because it's basically changing your definition as how you saw yourself as a woman, right? Went from like high heels to this, and now you're walking with the cane. And
I honestly had a conversation with my husband. One, he doesn't like for me to say, but I have to remain true to the process. I told him, I was like, this is between you and I. You are okay. I don't know what this is going to be.
Mm.
But anything else, he's my friend before anything else. I want you to live your life and go. And at that time, we had our two boys. And he was like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. And I'm like, okay. Because I don't know what this is going to look like.
Yeah.
So, yes. I was focused on me at that time.
Yeah, sure.
He was focused on me and the kids. He was doing all that. And that's important for everyone to realize that.
Yeah, and for the children, how old were they when you had this diagnosis?
They were 4 and 3.
4 and 3. Okay, so they were little.
Yeah.
They maybe didn't understand totally what was going on.
Not at all. What they saw was daddy helping mommy walk, or I'm using my cane, getting my cane out. I'm still driving. still at football, soccer practice, basketball, doing all those things, still working corporate America. With the diagnosis, my people were like, once you got on disability, I'm like, no. I went out 7 years after my diagnosis.
Okay. And so still, it was 7 years. So let's say from the time you got diagnosed to, so now you are.
May 2006.
Okay. So now you use a wheelchair to get around.
Primarily.
So can you still walk sometimes at all? Or are you?
No. It's ever when I met you in Cancun.
Mm-hmm.
Weeks before that, about a month before that, I had fallen and broken my ankle in two places, yeah. And it broke my heel bone. So when you met me, I had the cast on.
Yeah.
That was the very lowest that I'd ever been in my life.
Okay.
It wasn't the MS. It was the broken heel and ankle that broke me all the way down.
Right.
Because before that, I was able to move around, still do things on my own, still cook, still walk, still do this and, you know, move around. But when I broke my ankle and I was coming out of physical therapy, this is another transition. When I'm learning how to walk again and regain my strength, the goal was 77 steps with a walker. I'm like, okay, first day I did 44. My physical therapist is like, you're killing it. Right. So hubby got me some grip socks because I was like, okay, we have sliding floors and things of that nature. So he didn't want me to, you know, be walking and slip and fall. And so he bought me some grip socks. And so I'm rocking those grip socks and he's helping me to the bed.
Mm.
And the grip socks took hold to the carpet and did what it's supposed to do. Grip. Yeah. And I turned and broke my ankle. I heard it. It was like glass.
Oh,
it was,
my God.
I fell to the floor and that pain I'll never, ever forget. It was a pain I had never had. And I'm talking about been through childbirth and all that.
Mm.
That was a pain I never felt. And my husband was like there to try to scoop me up real quick. And I kept hitting the floor. Let me stay.
Right.
Let me stay. And he could not understand. I said, I want to feel it. And he could not understand why I said that. And I kept saying it. My mom came in the room because mom, she sacrificed. And yeah. So it was a moment that I needed to feel.
Right.
And so in that, that was in September. We had to go to October. I think it was the 18th, 19th of when we went for that. That was the lowest point that I had ever been in my life. And I never, ever, ever want to go back to that.
So from this time of like diagnosis to wheelchair, that was 7 years, you said?
Yes.
Okay, that time was 7 years. So what do you think helped you to accept the change from going from walking to the wheelchair?
The fact that I had someone to show me earlier on. My grandmother was paralyzed. She's the first person I ever saw in a wheelchair. I had never seen anyone not be able to walk before. And that happened when my mother was 15. She was actually going to go on her first date with my father when my grandfather came in and shot her 5 times.
Oh my gosh. That's so terrible.
Yes. Grandmother forgave him on the way to the emergency room. And so I come along years later.
And they stayed together after this?
Oh, my grandfather and my grandmother, no.
No, okay.
She divorced him. But the thing about it was that my mother was able to be there. She was the oldest of the children, and mm-hmm. she helped to raise her siblings.
Okay.
And help with my grandmother.
But yeah, so when your mother had kind of been through the process too, so kind of understood what you would be going through.
Yes.
So that's a blessing.
It is a blessing because I look at people and it's such a stark contrast. Like you're able to do this and how can you relate? Well, with my grandmother, it was the way that she rolled with grace.
Mm.
She's always was able to create space for people.
Right.
And she had a 2-bedroom apartment where she had a full blown candy store. So that was something that was so different.
And so never, she showed you like, just because you're in a wheelchair doesn't mean
life
stops.
It does not stop. She inspired. She opened the doors at 9 a.m. and closed them at 8 p.m. And those things were catalysts. Mm. So I watched how she moved. And I'm not talking about regular candy stores. We're talking like pull-up trucks, Frito-Lay, at that time, Coca-Cola, Pepsi. You know, all these different companies are pulling up and having to do inventory for her. And
so you had some angels along the way that kind of helped you get your mindset in the right place.
It was. It was. And you still have your personal journeys. You still will have your, not to say that you don't have any moments where you're upset, you're not able to do different things. It's just that in the big scheme of things, you realize that things are not as bad as you think, make them out to be. And everything in a sense does come to serve you. And so with that, you have to just roll with it.
Yeah.
So the first wheelchair was one that my husband could push me in. Right. And it was cool at first because he could push me and that was fine. But then at the point where I wanted to be able to control it and go my way, like we're in the mall and he's rolling past a certain store that I want to stop in, I had to hit the brake on him because he's trying to roll past. I see that sale over there. So me wanting to switch from being pushed to having my own chair where I'm able to mobilize, that was another transition that I wasn't prepared for.
So what would you say is one of the keys that helped you when you hit those low moments, when you were, you know, maybe angry at how things were or your inability to do certain things or that you used to do? What tools did you use to help shift your mind from that "woe is me" to what I've done?
I'm gonna be honest. My faith, my God, I think that, I know that he doesn't put no more on you than you can bear. And there's a reason why I'm in this situation. And I get the opportunity to take this situation and make it for his good, for his glory. Because it's not really about me, is it? Unless I'm able to take whatever the situation is and to encourage and inspire other people. And if it doesn't do that, then what is it?
Right. And that's the moment. Do you think that's the moment you started stepping into purpose?
It was at the CEO Collective when everything came about. When I went from sitting in that crowd, listening to the speakers and being in the room with you all and having that indication, like, this is it. And even being in the collective itself evolved. We all have said that we've evolved, right?
Yeah.
But I think at that very moment, it was those moments where you're just like, okay, God, this is what it's supposed to be. I see you. And it's going to be forever changing. It will always be.
Yeah, because as you said, that was when you hit a low moment, because you had already been in a chair for a while once you came to the CEO Collective, right?
Oh, it was just that chair I had just gotten.
Yeah, I remember. And it was like a remote control one. Oh, so you were happy with your new chair.
Yeah, I love this chair. This chair, the other one was a smaller one. I call it my Speedy. It's a fold up that I can control. And then you have the other. This is the big boy. This is the one that when I went into it, the lady was showing it to me and I was not looking at her. I was not paying attention to her.
You were paying attention to the chair.
Yeah. I was not even looking at this chair. I was looking at the small Speedy one because I was in my head, like, I'm going to get up and I'm going to walk again. So you showing me this big $30,000 chair, although it's nice and it does that, that's not for me. And there was another shift because it was like, we're not talking about where you are. We're talking about what the future is going to be. And the goal is for you to walk again. And we would like to see that. But in the midst of that, you need to be functional in your home. And you need to be able to do and go and move around as you should. And that was like, no.
Taking another shift. So that's the thing. It's like in this story, you had to deal with so many different transitions.
Yeah, and we all do.
Yeah. And it's no different from anything else in life. Like, it's sometimes we think like if we personally develop, get our mindset right, that we're going to be good forever. No, it's like life is going to throw you another curveball and you have to elevate again and elevate again and elevate again and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow.
that's it, Monday. You see it. You get it because it's exactly what it is. It's really like, okay, once you get over this hurdle, and it will be some more. There will be more.
Yeah.
And I tell my people all the time, when I tell people, I don't look at the word disability and I don't associate with it because disability for me is very discouraging, disheartening, and it's very sad. And it says that I can't, I'm not able to, won't be able to. And I don't have the mindset of that. I have that mindset of that I can and I will. I can do what you do. I may have to adjust in how I do things in order to get to that, to obtain that. But if we're going up the stairs, there's a ramp there, or there's an elevator for me, or there's a back door I can get in. There's a way for me to get there. I just have to be able to finagle it.
There's a will, there's a way, right?
There's a will, there's a way. So,
and it's for people to understand that we got, you know, you standing on your 2 feet.
Yes.
That, you know, every situation takes adaptability and adjustability. And if you can't adapt and adjust, you don't move forward. Right.
And that's my trademark. That's adjustability is the new disability. Because when I say disability, I mark that diss out. You're not dissing me. I'm not taking it. I'm not accepting it. Yeah, I'm not doing that. Right.
Yeah.
And
it's sort of like your disability made you able now to be an ambassador and advocate for other people suffering with MS.
Yes. And not even just with MS, but those in the wheelchairs.
Yeah.
There was a big fear for me when I went to Mexico because this big chair that they were going to tear it up. And it was a person that flew a certain particular airline and they dropped her, broke her chair. She was in a hospital right before we got to Mexico and she ended up passing away. So for me, getting on that trip was like, I ain't going. Right. And my girlfriend, who's been with me ever since forever, was like, oh, yes, the heck you are. We're going to go. And so
Another angel. And I think that sometimes when we can't ask for help, we need to listen to when it's being offered and to accept it, even when we're not brave enough to ask for it.
Oh, gosh, yes.
That friend, you know, who met you outside the bank and was like, girl, you better bedazzle this cane and let's keep it moving. You know, the example of your grandmother about how, you know, she still kept her life going. And that's when having a wheelchair was less, more modern and convenient than now.
Exactly.
And then from, you know, your husband saying, I'm here for you. I'm not going anywhere. And having that friend like, girl, if you do not get in this chair, it will get out of the bus.
We're going to Mexico. She was like, I'm going. She loves April. So she was like adamant about, oh, we going.
Yeah. No, I think that's wonderful. You know, in the coaching program I have now, Life Reimagined, it's all about intentions. And that's why I really love this story is that for people to understand, no matter what the circumstance is, you can transition to a life of purpose.
You
can follow your dreams. You can still take anything. Like some people think, well, I don't have the money. I don't have the time. I don't have the circumstances. I don't have this. I don't have that. You know, there are so many challenges that hits us as human beings. And when we focus and we have the right mindset, we know ourselves and believe in ourselves. Our ability to transition to do beautiful and purposeful things in our life is endless.
Endless. One of the things I realized is that, and I always thought that it would be because of my hand. And how selfish and how crazy of that to me to think that I can control and muster up any and everything for myself. When I realized that he puts me in position and key to be able to be there and he guides me and the doors are already opening.
Yes.
I don't hunt anything. I'm not hustling nothing. I'm not trying to get at something. God just opens the door element and you just have to be in position, be ready and do it.
And I think you have to be willing to let go of anger. Ooh. I'm pretty sure some of this process anger was in there. Like, we all get angry when we want to do something, be something, go somewhere, have something, girl, and we can't have it, we can't do it. You know, we get angry. And if you hold on to that anger, it'll fester and it'll turn you into somebody who complains, who doesn't adjust, who doesn't change. Mm-hmm. And then everything else is even if the thing that happened to you is not your fault, because trust me, we have all had something bad happen to us. Not our fault.
But you get to change the story. And that's the part that I think, I know for me, October 3rd of 2022 was the lowest. I was in the shower and I was like, what if I wasn't? Now, I'm going to preference this and say, now your girl don't own no gun. She's not that type of person. Not that there's anything wrong with owning a gun. I just can't, you know, my family's history, I would never, it doesn't sit well with me. However, I was like, what if I was out of the equation? Because at this point, I can't do anything. I can't walk. Mm-hmm. I can't bathe myself. I can't do anything. And I'm having to solely rely on my family.
Yeah.
That's another step.
Yes.
When you go from regular panties to pull-ups.
Yeah.
Like that.
Everything changes.
Everything changes when you're having to go out of the country and you have to have a friend that, and you're a very private person and you're like, hold up, she's got to help me wash up and change. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Adjustability.
Yeah.
And God placed someone who understood and walked this journey, who's seen me, and she's able to do that.
And accepting vulnerability too, you know, I think we all really struggle with vulnerability, and definitely, you know, with me working with people going through life transitions, that's like when you're transitioning to a new you, that's kind of the most vulnerable time
it is
of your life, because
yes,
you don't know what's going on. You don't know how things are going to end up or happen. You know, it's like being a newborn baby. And I think as adults, we don't consider that as the case, but you are, when you're transitioning to a new life, you're a newborn baby, and you have to protect yourself like you would a baby and treat yourself with as much love and care as a baby. Like, a baby ain't like, I don't need you to get my bottle. Like, you do. you do.
Yeah.
Like, someone needs to feed you and give you strength until you're strong enough to hold it on your own and to do that in a way, you know, so it's also accepting that we all need nurturing to get to a strong point.
Yes.
To be able to do it on our own. Like, I tell people, you shouldn't have to do coaching for the rest of your life. It normally comes in stages when you're moving to a different level, to a different thing. But my job is to nurture you and to feed you and give you tools so that then you can go off and do it on your own and handle transitions on your own.
I love it.
Yeah, but you have to be willing to receive.
Oof. And that's another thing. I think that once we step aside, put pride aside, and get to it.
Get pride aside and get to it.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for sharing your beautiful story.
Thank you.
With us. And I'm just going to ask you quickly, what would you have to say to someone who, let's say, is at the beginning of their journey? Like, they just got diagnosed. And maybe it's a hard pill to swallow. What advice would you give someone who's at the beginning of their transition?
Mm-hmm. Take time to breathe. Mm-hmm. What I mean that is, sometimes we got to be silent and to hear ourselves, our heart's desires. And so for me, I think how I went through the whole scenario, it's so important to acknowledge the space and to honor yourself and to embrace what's coming to serve you. Doesn't mean that you have to accept and just lay in it, but just embrace, this is a transition. Okay. Identify it. This is a transition, and how can I move forward? And then reach out to a coach like Monday who can help navigate you to the next level. Don't think that you can do it on your own, and don't think that you need to do it on your own.
Yes.
Because sometimes your people that are close to you may not even see or understand it. and it's not for you to
sit there. They may be too emotionally invested.
Exactly.
To give you the space.
Exactly.
They start projecting their fears onto you.
Yes.
And which is normal. It's like, oh my God, you know, are you gonna, you know, and you feel yourself consoling people when you like, I'm dealing with my own problems over here. You know what I'm saying? I'm the one with MS. Like, why am I consoling you?
It opens up everything. And you're like, wow.
Yeah.
So in that essence, I would just tell people to, girl, guy, chill. And just know that all things come to serve you.
Yeah. And so I know you're an MS ambassador. So I will definitely be. So can you tell us, what do you help people with MS do? Is it helping them to get resources to find out how they can get the help they need?
Yes. As an MS ambassador, I advocate and I go to, like, say, for instance, meet with legislators. I went to the Capitol, Georgia State Capitol, 2 Mondays ago. Mm-hmm. And there we were talking with legislators and representatives of the House and Senate to talk about the change in Medicare or Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So that when there's a gap, that they're not missing their medicines and they're not leaping and there's a gap. So for me, being able to advocate on that aspect is so important. My grandmother always taught me to pay attention to even the opposite ideas. So I believe that when I'm going into MS and all that, it's not a Republican Democrat thing. It's not an independent thing. It's a human thing, and adjustability is a human thing.
And it can happen to any of us.
It can happen to anyone. And adjustability is not just the physical aspect of things. It's adjusting to mindset shifts, adjusting to financials, spiritual aspects, mindset thinking. Adjustability can go into all encompassing areas. Yeah. And so when you put a negative connotation on it, it's presented as such. So I encourage people to embrace that. And with the MS Society, as being an advocate for them, it gives me the opportunity to be able to stand and let them see that, yes, I'm in this wheelchair and I still have purpose, but I still got a mouthpiece, babe.
Yeah.
I still have that.
That's right.
It's still right.
Aren't you also helping people travel?
I do. I have a travel agency, Tripletive Travel, where we specialize in all-inclusive resort getaways and cruises. So I love places where when I send my people, it's all you can eat. You've already paid for it. The drinks are good. So I love that.
And it's all wheelchair accessible activities and everything that they need to do. Right. Yeah. So if anybody is looking to, if you're in a wheelchair, you're looking to how you can travel and want to travel, maybe with like-minded people, I will definitely have the information for Tiffany's travel agents. Also, all her contact and social media details, I will have in the description.
Yes.
So please feel free to reach out to her if she is an advocate. And and I would just thank you for sharing your story
with
us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the platform and creating and cultivating a spirit, a sense of safe place for people to do the transition. That's important. And so I thank you for opening it and having it. And I think that more people should be open to addressing issues and concerning themselves with getting those things dealt with and seen.
And we all need support, you know, like if you're transitioning, that's the time you need support, because it's an all new journey. And for those who are interested in, if they're transitioning and want to get a hold of me as well and learn more about the Life Reimagined coaching program, I will have my details. You can contact me there.
Please.
I just want to thank everyone for listening.
Yes.
And I'll just thank Tiffany again, and you'll find all her contact details, like I said, in the description. And we look forward to speaking with you next time.
Yes.
Thank you. So goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everyone. Have a blessed day.
Well, I hope you have enjoyed today's episode as much as I have, and we look forward to speaking with you next time. Remember, you can find replays of all episodes on World Radio Paris or on my podcast streaming on all major platforms. Have a great day.